Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood, and welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we are joined, as always, by you, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
We are back. We took a week off last week just because, you know, because.
We're so sorry.
We do apologize. It was quite the week. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look back a little bit. We look forward a little bit using the device that we have come up with. Also going to look at the Make Me Smart book club, although only briefly because not all of us have read the book.
We're calling it. It's just that it's a book club update.
That's right.
I like the idea because book club, you know, you just go off and then you come back. Why not make it a journey together?
That's
we'll
correct.
Talk about how far we've gotten. I should have probably brought the book into the room with me, and then I could have read some of the highlighted passages.
Really? Have you been highlighting?
But you know what? Maybe nobody wants that. Well, I'm reading it on my Kindle, so I just drag my finger along.
Wow.
But you know, yes. Well, we will get to that when we do our little update. But so since many of you had just discovered that we were doing book club, and some of us are slower readers, because they didn't want to read this book in the first place, Kai Rizdahl.
Look, I read fine. I just haven't done it. Is the point?
He just didn't want to. Okay, but before we do any of that, we're going to have a big fix today. It's the news fix, actually, the part of the show where we talk about the things that are happening in the news and try to connect some dots, put them in context. And we've been getting, I feel like we get at least a tweet an hour asking us if something is normal or not normal.
Yeah. I need to set up a column on my tweet deck with the hashtag Make Me Smart, which I haven't yet. I confess, I know Jenny's looking at me now through the glass saying, what is the matter with you? You bozo, you haven't done that already.
Oh, you know, that's funny because you're going to have a total fit about this, as you sometimes do, and I'm untechie. But this will blow your mind.
What?
I use Twitter.com.
Do you? What?
Yeah, I don't even use TweetDeck. I hate it.
Really?
Yeah. I go to the website.
But
I use the app on my phone, but I'm thinking about deleting the app on my phone because I feel like I can't professionally speaking, but
yeah.
It's preventing me from a lot of other productive tasks.
So would you not be on mobile Twitter?
I mean, I guess I would just go to the mobile Twitter website when I felt like I really needed to get
an update. That seems a little cumbersome, my senior tech correspondent friend. There's an app for that.
I know. Well, the goal is to detox
because
for crying out loud.
Did you see that thing the other day, by the way? A little bit off track, and then we're going to get back on track. And the track involves this. I want you to think about what today's date is. And I know we're not supposed to talk about dates and all that jazz to keep this, you know, the newsy part of our broadcast evergreenish for a couple of days. But think about what today's date is.
Yeah.
But did you see the thing the other day where if you switch your phone to grayscale, you are much less likely to reflexively pull it out of your pocket because it's less rewarding to look at grayscale icons than it is to look at color icons.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And I tried it for a while and I really hated it. And I decided I liked being hooked on color icons. And so I went back.
Well, yeah, that's how addiction works, bro.
I know.
Like, that's what just...
Are you about to tell me I'm bougie again?
I was going to say I tried to quit alcohol, and then I felt better when I drank it, so I went back.
Okay. All right. Fine. Anyway, with
that's
that,
hilarious.
Quick, what is today's date?
Today is June 6th, 2017, otherwise known as D-Day.
That is correct.
Yep.
And if you were on TweetDeck or Twitter, I'm sure you saw your share of pictures this morning of the Rams dropping at Omaha Beach and the guys storming out of those landing craft.
Yep.
And that gets me directly to what is so not normal about plus or minus the last 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to say this. It is not normal. Say what you will about standard Republican policies, right? And you can say that about climate change. You can say it about the budget that Mulvaney put out 10 days, 2 weeks ago. You can say it about the tax plan. You can say it about health care. You can say in some vein, all of those things are normal. I would submit that it is not normal for an American president to be actively disengaging from the world and from the established international order that those pictures represent.
Yeah.
Because that was the beginning, right?
Yeah.
That was present at the creation right there. And so that's my intro to normal, not normal. That's where I am.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can go all the way back to the NATO trip, the trip to Europe a little more than a week ago. And
now
that some of those details are coming out about his failure and it looks like potentially refusal to reaffirm the commitment to Article 5, which basically says if one of you gets attacked, we will help you. It's a one for all for one kind of thing, which every American president, I think, since the foundation of NATO has affirmed explicitly. It now looks like that was in there in his speech and at some point before it was given came out.
Yep.
And so came out deliberately and came out by either his own hand or, and I'm guessing this is the case, by the hands of Steve Bannon and Steve Miller.
Oh, that's interesting. I think he actually did it on the fly. I think he did it between the time that he was introduced to speak and he spoke. I think those guys counseled him on the way, and they were the last ones to have his ear, as they clearly were on the climate change thing. But I think he just said, you know what? People are telling me I have to do this, and I don't want to do it. I'm no psychiatrist or psychologist, right? But that's what I think. I think he just did it, because as we're seeing now with him, so much of it is we don't want to be laughed at. Right. So much of it is, how are people viewing me? And people are telling me to do this, so I don't want to do it. And that's where I am.
Yeah, that's
possible. I think you just did it on the fly.
Now, I will say it is relatively normal for presidents, depending on the president, not to listen to their advisors.
Yeah, because they get to decide.
Right. I mean, that is not at all outside the bounds of possibility. And in fact, General McMaster himself wrote a book about Vietnam in which he said that Lyndon B. Johnson's generals didn't speak the truth to him, and or if they did, he didn't listen. And that's part of why Vietnam became such a morass.
No, that's totally true. Now, can we do a thought experiment here? And I say thought experiment because I'm reading a book about Einstein, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh. You should totally be reading that other book, though.
I know.
You just walked right into that.
As soon as I said I'm reading a book about
you
Einstein,
you were
I'm
going
like,
on a bear hunt.
That's right, going on a bear hunt. Somebody in our organizational chain of command, who shall remain nameless, but whose initials are Deborah Clark, said to me the other day, listen, here's what I think we ought to do. I think just as an editorial exercise, we should look at all this stuff that fits in the not normal side of the frame and try to find a way that it is normal and try to find what those people who support President Trump, who voted for him, who espouse his policies, how do they think that this makes sense?
Yeah.
Right? So I'll start, right?
Yeah.
There is a way in which you could look at privatizing your traffic control, right? His most recent, I think, public address to the nation, as it were. And he said, we're going to privatize air traffic control. We're going to set up a private corporation, and it's not going to cost the taxpayers any money. And you say, okay, well, air traffic control is expensive. We are technologically behind the power curve. Maybe there is a way that if we set up an independent corporation, seed it maybe with some tax breaks and a little bit of government money to get it going, that might work. So that's one way to look at that. The other way to look at it is critical piece of national infrastructure. What do you mean you're going to privatize it?
Right.
And how is it possible that prices are not eventually going to rise once a private corporation has control of where airplanes go in the sky? So, you know, there is a way to look at some of these things and say, that you could make that make sense if you wanted to, I guess, is my pitch.
Well, and actually that has been a goal of Republicans for years.
Well, yes.
I mean, that's not so. Yes. And so solely within, you know, I think once you get to that, the normal frame, like you said, and I think it is not just a thought experiment. It's part of the kind of, to borrow from another podcast, parallel universe situation that we have going on here because of nurtured narratives and frankly, all of the hysteria. That is a stated Republican goal. And you have Mitch McConnell on television saying, look, minus all the drama, most of which is self-inflicted by this administration,
yep,
the policy goals as stated, even in the budget, are basically those of a right-of-center administration, which is exactly what the GOP has wanted.
Totally. And you can – it makes sense that Mick Mulvaney, who's a budget director for a Republican president, comes out and says, I want to have a little sympathy here for the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but that's – you know, you can't fault him for applying Republican and conservative logic to that.
Right. No, it's not untrue. I mean, I want our tax code to take into account, for example, the absolutely absurd cost of living here that requires me to make more money than my mom thinks is reasonable in order to, like,
right.
live.
Right.
No, I mean, I think, there are a lot of things that are normal. And there are a lot of things that, look, go all the way back like 6 days to the withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, right?
Yep.
What's not normal there is that the statements about the Paris Climate Accord included so many untruths.
Well, yeah, totally.
That part,
I completely agree.
Is not normal.
And I was about to say, let's set those aside for a minute, but you really can't, right? You have to deal with the willful misstatement of facts.
Yes. And you kind of got to start there, because then that's part of why I think the whole conversation gets so confused. Withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord is basically a big, splashy, hostile PR move. Because the fact is...
Well, it's withdrawing from the international order.
From the international order, exactly.
Right.
But it is not... I mean, the falsehoods conflate it. It's not a treaty, right? It doesn't have an immediate economic impact. The gears of a lot of this economic change in terms of moving industries in a greener direction are already in motion. I mean, even major oil companies backed the Paris Climate Accord, right? Mm-hmm. ExxonMobil is like, nah, we're already working on that algae thing. So,
right.
You know, a lot of this has already started. Many very well-respected climatologists already say that we have passed a tipping point in terms of climate change prevention, and we're on to mitigation anyway, which cities know, businesses know. I mean, for God's sake, Google is working on like wetlands restoration, because – the Google and Facebook campuses, the new Facebook campus in particular, is probably going to be underwater in 20 years.
Is right next to a wetland, right?
There are serious consequences in the U.S. The global economy is already moving in a greener direction, and pulling out of this accord won't necessarily change that. I would make the argument that all of these moves sort of put us on a path dependence toward...
Ooh, path dependence.
I guess like privatizing our future. Because businesses will end up picking up the mantle, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right, which gets me to the point I want to make. And we actually talked about this in the editorial meeting, in the Marketplace Radio editorial meeting a couple of days ago. This idea that you had actually, you know, 10, 12 podcasts ago, whatever it was, of businesses being a check on government, and how so many businesses now are saying, we're going to stick with Paris no matter what the federal government does. I do think it's interesting, though, the waning influence of CEOs on the CEO president, right? Because Elon Musk and Tim Cook and Lloyd Blankfein and Jeff Immelt, right? All of those guys said, listen, don't do this. Stay in the deal. We need certainty. We need to know what the policies are going to be. And he went, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I flipped the bird at my TV monitor.
Really?
You know what I mean?
I wish we had a picture.
Yeah, well, I did. Well, it's radio. I have to say, you know, you have to be descriptive on the radio.
I flip the bird all the time on the podcast. No, I think you're absolutely right. And as they continue to have – it's so interesting what you just said, though. I keep thinking about – you're absolutely right about this sort of the – I guess what they used to call the anti-disestablishmentarianism of his responses. It's like it doesn't matter that they're all CEOs. If they all come and tell him to do one thing, he's going to do the opposite just because he needs to be in charge. He needs to be the decider.
Yeah.
But what I think happens is the businesses, then they go their own route. But like, if then you've got businesses running air traffic control, you've got businesses providing essential services, you've got businesses making infrastructure investment decisions that will ultimately benefit them. What you get, you know, the downside of the checks and balances thing, which is, like you said, not even a check. The downside is what you get is a future that is defined by for-profit companies.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you argue that that was already happening, once you take all what the – and you could argue that that is in fact a stated goal of the GOP platform, of that sort of libertarian, that kind of really, really small government philosophy, what it leads to is businesses taking up the reins in all of those areas that end up getting cut? And what does that, I mean, this is the marketplace story, right? What does that mean for us?
Mm-hmm. Can I throw another one out there on the normal, not normal scale? And it's a little bit of a trick question and get your take on it.
Yeah.
This woman, the leaker, who was arrested the other day for leaking NSA secrets about Russians hacking into a voting, not an actual counting machine, but into some of the software that provides information in those machines. So is that normal or not normal?
Which part, the arrest or the hacking?
The arrest.
You know what? Yes. Is the weird part.
Yeah, it wasn't a yes-no question. Is that normal or not normal?
oh, right. Sorry. Where normal is in the affirmative.
Got it.
No, I think I absolutely think that arresting leakers, well, if it was not normal before, it was normalized by the Obama administration.
Oh, that's aggressively. There you go. Right.
Well,
that's
as
where I
was,
to get. Right.
Let's be honest, as was surveillance, droning, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Expanding executive power.
Yep.
A lot of the things that we are now seeing in the Trump administration were unquestionably normalized by the Obama administration, and nobody's having that conversation anymore.
Yeah.
Like, all of that stuff that came out about the unmasking and the FISA court, you know, all the Americans getting swept up in that, all of that.
Yep.
The surveillance state under the Obama administration has been something that's been driving people in the tech community crazy for 8 years, and I hope that there is not a good edit on that situation moving mm-hmm. forward. Anyway. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd
throw that out there. But anyway, all of
but
which is to say,
like, unfortunately, arresting leakers because it is against the law.
Yep.
And then there's the whole whistleblowing conversation and whatever. But arresting and prosecuting leakers is not unusual. What is not normal, though, is the idea of getting warrants for journalists, which he did float.
Obama did, too. Right. I mean, that's what you're talking about.
Obama did. And then Trump, too. Right. Didn't he ask Director Comey? Well, reportedly. In one of the anonymous source meetings, asked him to start.
Although we're going to find out on Thursday those conversations, because that's when.
Oh yeah, I'm just not going to be here that day. I just want to go ahead and just let everybody know I'm taking Thursday off.
You know, my favorite part of that is the bars in Washington D.C. that are opening early so that people can come and watch the testimony.
I know. I mean, the other part of normal, not normal, is can we just remember what people are doing in their everyday lives? For the most part, they are going about them.
Well, so here's the thing. I was so the reason we didn't have a Facebook Live yesterday, if I could just close that loop and then we can move on, is because I was out for a certain medical procedure that was most unpleasant and invalided me for most of the day.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. But here's the deal. I was off the grid for a good portion of the day, and this goes back to something I said months ago. It was so relaxing, and it was so nice. And now I'm back. And even as horrible as Sunday and yesterday were, because of the certain unnamed medical procedure, it's tiring to be back. I'm just telling you, and it's crazy.
That's why I want to delete Twitter.
Yeah, I get it.
Guys, tell us what you think. Would you delete Twitter? I mean, it does seem journalistically irresponsible,
That's a really good question.
And
I would love to hear what people say.
It's not helping.
I will not be bound by this referendum, but I totally would be interested to see what people say.
Ooh, can we make a poll? I just asked producers a question, which is unfair, but I feel like we should make a poll on the website. Like, would it be better to delete Twitter? Because, look, at least half of what we're reading right now, and this is not meant to be a knock on the media. God knows there have been enough of those. But at least half of what we're reading right now is incomplete at best and not helpful to the discourse. And if discourse is a big part of the problem, and it is, then reading the tweet that makes you feel good from either side is probably not helpful. And frankly, a lot of the stories aren't either, because at some point there will be a resolution to every narrative that is bubbling up right now. And it's really the resolution that's the news, not every single development. It's like you know how you have that friend who needs to process everything with you? Just tell me, are you going to stay with him or are you going to break up? That's all I need to know.
I don't know. All right. So let's have a little poll, and we should do a delete Twitter poll, actually, is what we ought to do.
Ooh. Okay. Right? So we're going to do that right after this.
So you do one, I'll do one, and we'll get it out there.
I love it. And then you can also email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. And then I think we should also try to do a web poll if we can.
And
just go and see if it's there, because you'll probably find a great blog post, marketplace.org/makemesmart.
Yeah. Because Tony will write it, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, because he's awesome like that.
Yeah.
And then we are going to, special editorial meeting. This is kind of like only for the listeners who are really on the ball. If you downloaded this podcast like today.
or early tomorrow.
Or early tomorrow. There will be a Facebook Live editorial meeting. It's a special Wednesday version at 12 noon Pacific. But for those of you who are catching up a little later, we have them on Mondays at 12 Pacific on our Facebook pages, which are facebook.com/KaiRizdahl and facebook.com/Mollywood.
We are, though, going to go to the book thing now, right? Isn't that what we're going to do, even though I haven't read?
You're going to get called out. Here it comes.
That sounds like a movie soundtrack.
Ooh.
I like that.
It does.
Is that out of a movie?
It's funny that when it first started, I almost went, "Don't ask me." Like, that's what it... what you know is
really?
True. I may have gone to an 80s, 90s house party this weekend.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Well,
I wore my Jordans. I wore my sweet new Jordans.
I saw that Insta post. I saw it on Insta. I was like, oh, man.
Oh, my God. They're so awesome. They're Jordan retro mids. They make me just feel like I'm in high school again, talking to my bro about NBA.
Now you're speaking the language I don't understand.
You know what? I think I might be starting to become a little bit of a sneakerhead, which is the thing. It's a whole marketplace should do a story.
Oh, no,
I like
I know.
How I say marketplace like I don't work here. We. It's my subtle way of saying, like, hey, Kai, you should totally do a story about the sneaker thing. Also, LaCroix water.
I don't even know what that means.
It's
Are those
really?
Sneakers?
And no, LaCroix water is like the fizzy water in the cans. Or are you talking about the sneakerhead thing? I'm all over the place today.
No, I thought LaCroix water was sneakers. What? What? I don't even. Okay, so about the book.
Oh, all right.
Oh, man.
It's a thing. You can see LaCroix everywhere now.
Except where I shop.
Okay, the book. All right, so last week we mentioned that we were going to do this Make Me Smart book club on today's episode. And by do the book club, we meant talk about the book as though we had all read it. It turns out that a lot of you, this is not only Kai, a lot of you wrote in to ask for more time to finish the book because it's really long. I need more time to finish the book because it's really long. Also, it's like a textbook. It's one of those things where every time I read a page, I have to go back and read it again.
No, you got to sell it. Don't make it a dreary thing. Sell it.
No, it's not. It's just thick with information.
All right.
And it's long. So what we thought we'd do is just like turn our lemon into lemonade.
Well, I don't even know what that means.
And reframe our failure as a book club update.
How to start a book club.
Books are fun.
I have my own book club.
Oh, I just can't wait to read a book.
As a reminder, we are reading The Righteous Mind. I know, right? It's The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. It's by Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist at New York University, NYU, as it's known.
And it's really interesting. If you have not started the book or aren't reading along with us at all, I'm basically in the first two chapters still. But they're all about...
And you're making me feel bad? You're two chapters in. You're giving me a hard time.
Where are you?
Just for the record.
Have you started it?
Page one.
Mm-hmm.
Of the
so, yes.
To the preface.
I think I have roughly 87 pages on you, sir.
All right, fine.
But so far, I have learned quite a lot about the study of reasoning and how it has evolved over time and how it's gone from like a sense that there was purely intuition to like reason being paramount to reason and intuition working together to the biological elements of reasoning. And I assume all of that's going to get to politics and religion at some point. It's super interesting. And we some people are reading along with us and have early reactions. And so we thought we would play some of those.
Thank you for instituting a book club. It's a great idea, even though, like Kai, I voted for The Man in the High Castle. Maybe next? Notwithstanding that, I did read The Righteous Mind, and it depressed the hell out of me, so thank you for that.
I found it one of the more interesting books that I've read over the past 20 years or so. I was particularly, I guess I was baited by his introduction and hooked by his humor.
What a great pick it is. I'm reading it very slowly because to me, it's a very, very dense book with a lot of information to process.
So that's a lesson to Jake the engineer this week, not to leave my microphone on during a playing of tape because you hear my thoughts out loud, right?
because the gloating is audible?
The gloating was audible, yes. That was Kay Gilbert, Peter Harkin, one of the two people who actually recommended the book, also Allison Carter there at the end. They had much more to say, as I'm sure you do too. Send us an audio file or email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org and we'll put it on the pod.
Yeah, and also I appreciate the encouragement from the people who said it was among the more interesting books of the last 20. I mean, the people who have – people are super into this book. A bunch of people that I know tweeted me about it. My friend read it. So I have to get there. I'm having a little – I like initially had some trouble getting – he uses this kind of convoluted metaphors for what's going to happen in the chapter. Like one of them is the central metaphor for this chapter is going to be the elephant – the rider and the elephant, and like the rider is reasoning and the elephant is intuition and the rider's trying to influence the direction of the elephant. It's a little like it's a little tortured. So I'm glad to know that it, much like life, it gets better. Next up, we have, and I'm glad we have this because I have a super fan friend who was like, if there's not a Make Me Smart question in this episode, I'm out.
Wow. That's tough, man. So we get lots of questions for people on the show. We have them, we ask them, they answer them. Only one of them, though, is perpetually, and I'm talking like every single time, a stumper.
Mm-hmm.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
It's a big old hunker of a question. The Make Me Smart question is, what is something you thought you knew but then found out you were wrong about? I spoke with Todd Lieberman a while ago for Marketplace. He produced Disney's live-action version of Beauty and the Beast, made $500 million at the box office. And by the way, I liked it. He deals with lots of different kinds of people producing movies, right? Studio executives, movie stars, directors, editors, craft services, you name it. So his answer to the Make Me Smart question was all about other people. Here he is, Todd Lieberman.
So I guess there is scientific evidence that shows within the first 15 seconds of meeting somebody, you'll make a judgment whether you like them or don't like them. And what I've learned is that people are so complicated and that inside everybody, there's way more going on than anyone might think, that if you really take the time to explore, you can find something you like about everybody. And this is what I'm trying to impart on my children.
I met you, Molly Wood. I liked you right away. I still like you. I'm just saying.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm just saying,
you know. I was afraid I had blown it. You know, just by podcasting. That is so funny because that is two things about that. One, that's kind of what Jonathan Haidt's first couple chapters are about.
Oh, wow.
You'll find out.
So I was going to say, now I don't have to read them.
And then the other, I met at the 80s, 90s house party, there was a woman there who was a graphologist, who is a person who studies
handwriting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so she was basically just doing it as a party trick. At this party, so you'd sit down and you'd write one, you know, I mean, this woman doesn't know, you don't even tell her your name. You write down a sentence and then you write your signature and then she gives you a whole bunch of stuff about yourself, like a palm reader, which is a fun party trick. But one of the things that she said was about me in particular, but that was also kind of funny, is that she said that I was very selective about people. And I was like, you mean judgy? That's true. But she said that I was really logical but ruled by intuition, and that when you that it much like everybody, that you meet people and you get an intuition about them immediately, and then you try to talk yourself out of it, especially if you don't like them. And then you talk to them for a few more minutes and you go, nah, I was totally right about that.
Wow.
So
you are judging.
Now Todd Lieberman has inspired me to try to be more generous.
Yeah.
There is always something, though.
Totally true.
If you're a curious person.
It's totally true. Totally true. But you got to dig for it.
That's a wonderful – that is actually a very uplifting answer to the Make Me Smart question. I like that.
I want to bring up another Instagram post of yours from the weekend.
Yeah. I had a fun weekend.
It's a little bit – you did. It's a little bit of a glam shot. It's Friday, sunlit background, you walking along, holding your phone down, shooting up, and underneath your denim jacket is –
my Wonder Woman costume.
I know, just because we were talking about movies.
Yay!
Right?
I saw Wonder Woman with
so did I.
Three ladies. You saw it with your kids, right?
Yes. Yeah, you bet.
Oh,
well,
I love that.
Three
and your 10-year-old daughter?
Oh, she loved it. She was like, yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was really cool.
Yeah, so I have not taken my son yet, but I'm going to. I saw it with the ladies on Friday night, and we wore our costumes, and there were a bunch of other women in their costume because it's the mission. And It was, I came out of that movie and I felt like how dudes must feel after they see Rocky. Like, I was fired up. I was ready to pick a fight.
So, yes,
I was wondering, did you come out the same way? Because superhero movies do that too.
Totally. Well, so here's what I got out of it, actually. And this, oh my God, listen to this. This goes back to this being June the 6th. This was, and I understand it's a superhero movie and it's make-believe and all of that. But that scene where she's, and attention, spoiler alert, that scene where she's crossing no man's land, having climbed out of the Allied trench, and she's crossing to go to the Germans, and she's got the shield up, and she's taking all the fire so that the men can scoot around the backside, right? I got that whole feeling I get, and people who know me will understand this, of being part of something bigger than yourself.
Wow.
And it was, honestly, kind of wild. It hit me. And that's more touchy-feely than I meant to get. Thank you very much.
Oh, see, that's why we do the show, basically. That right there. Keeper.
Yeah. I got a little...
There's no shame in my game. I'm a crier. I mean, I know. It was... The themes are universal, and they always are in superhero movies, but that one in particular, because it's World War I, especially...
Yeah.
I mean, war is always hell, but my God. Yeah. The just brutality... Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. Ooh, we have a clip, right? Can we hear, hear some? The other thing I loved about it before we even hear the clip
Let's hear it, but not yet. One more
is
thing
the music. I know, I distracted myself. I tangented myself. But I loved the music. I actually noticed the soundtrack, particularly the song at the end. I really liked it. Anyway, what are we going to hear? Let's play some.
Never let your guard down.
Oh, yeah.
You expect a battle to be fair. A battle will never be fair.
All right, so my one critique of that film was Robin Wright's accent.
Kind of all the accents, let's be honest.
Except Gal Gadot, right? Because she's Israeli.
Right.
But the other ones who were putting it on,
And I don't know I don't know why they did that. Like, I don't know why they gave everybody else a weird accent just because she has an accent. That was, you did not need that. And then
Because it comes in the middle of this absolutely kick-ass battle training scene, which is awesome, and these women are just doing all these cool things, and it's great, and Chris Pine is standing there going, what? And it was great.
Yeah.
And then they had these weird accents.
You're like, why is she talking like that? And then, by the way, Chris Pine, God love him, lovely man, cannot do a German accent to save his life. I mean, it's like he didn't even try.
papers, please. All right, anyway, so now that we're off the rails.
Go see it.
Listener mail, hit it.
Where do we mail a letter?
All right, we got this message from Allie Dierks. Have we sent Allie a pop socket yet? Because Allie, if we haven't sent you a pop socket yet, please email us your address because you're like a super fan. Allie very fondly remembers the opening theme to Dinner in a Movie on TBS, which you may recall we played right before we talked with Annabelle Gurwitch.
Is she going to sing it?
I freaked out, full on freaked out, almost dropped and shattered a glass dish when I heard the Dinner in a Movie Beans and Cornbread song out of nowhere. That was a really fun interview and a nice flashback. So thanks for that.
Oh,
and Kai should definitely dance more.
No, nobody wants to see me dance. I'm fine getting all emotional and teary about Wonder Woman, but I am not dancing for anybody.
God. I totally thought of you during Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, which was a dumb movie. Come on. I didn't even see it, but the whole concept is just stupid. I know. Jenny's looking daggers at me through the studio.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to start
backing away from the,
I didn't mean to start up that rage machine again.
The talkback button so that she doesn't yell at me.
Well, there's a moment where a guy says, there are two kinds of people in this world, the kind who dance and the kind who don't.
Oh.
Right, and I was
so
like,
maybe it wasn't that stupid.
Maybe there are. Also, I just put a little note in our rundown that says LOL because of what Kai is about to say right now.
I am about to say that Allie was one of the first listeners to get a Make Me Smart pop socket, unbeknownst to Molly Wood, apparently. The good news, though, is that you can get one, too. Just go to marketplace.org/makemesmart. Click on that little green donate button, and we'll put a link in the show notes as well on the pod, because honestly, none of this happens without y'all, and it takes more people and time and money and energy to make this than it sounds like, because I know you think Molly and I are just here screwing around, but we're not.
I mean, I am, obviously.
However, am a trained podcast professional. All right, we got to go. That's it for us. Go to Apple Podcasts, and I'm telling you, I think that's another branding fail by that company, but whatever. Review us, subscribe, tell a friend, and read the book, because I'll get in trouble if you don't.
We're going to do it. We can do this. We're reading the book. We'll see you next week. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Cerise Castle, and senior producer Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Jake Gorski. Our theme music, this music you're listening to right now, is composed in the house by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive producer of Marketplace is Tar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is the aforementioned Deborah Clark. Listen. Here we go. This is from a couple of weeks ago,
Dance.
Where I said that somebody had tweeted at me that it goes better at double speed, and it's much more rocking.
You're talking at double speed, I can tell you that. It's working.
You know what's happening? The caffeine is kicking it.
And we played at double speed, and then everything is super great.
And we got to go now.
It's my favorite.
No notes? There were no notes on that?
What?
You're still recording, right? Put this on the end so that everybody knows there were no notes on this.
I love that.
You got to listen to the end, people. You got to listen to the end.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.